Football never slows down. Last week proved it, and this week's about to double down. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the TBD College Football Show, your go-to for everything college football. I'm your host, Mason. Alongside me, my co-host this week, Joey. Our other co-host, Isaac, is normally here, but he's actually in Hawaii this week on a work trip, having a good time. But don't worry, we're going to miss him, but we still have all the action and all the picks. Before we start, I want to apologize to the Missouri fans. I was blinded by my SEC geographic bias, and I need to give credit where credit is due. Missouri looked really good against Kansas. Pribula, he played a great game. I was wrong. They should have been hyped up. They looked like a really good team. So how about this? In order to find some common ground, how about together we all point and laugh at Florida, who lost to USF at home this week, which is where we're going to begin our Week 2 review. That's got a nice ring to it, don't it? We're going to start with our pick records real quick. Me and Isaac, we tied for second place after going 3-4 last week, so we're in second place at 10-10. People on TikTok are right. I don't know ball. It's okay. Joey, on the other hand, he takes sole first place after going 6-1 last week, his only loss being Florida to USF, which no one saw coming. He now holds, like I said, sole first place with a record of 13-7. Week 2 in college football delivered drama, surprise, and some absolute dominant performances. Let's start with the biggest shocker, like I just mentioned, USF over Florida, 18-6 in the swamp. Nico Gramatica, he hits a last-second field goal to seal it, and USF has now beaten two unranked teams in a row to start the season. This has not happened since 1936. Florida's 11 penalties for 103 yards and the ejection of a key defender really doomed them.
That's a rough one for Florida. You just cannot turn the ball over and commit that many penalties against a team like that is that hungry, like USF, you know, going in and beating Boise State the week before. And seriously, what is up with the spitting?
Missouri, like we just mentioned too, was equally dramatic in the newly installed Border War, rallying from 21-6 down to beat Kansas 42-31. Bo Pribula threw for 334 yards and three touchdowns, while Jamal Roberts added 143 rushing yards and a 63-yard game-sealing touchdown run. Kevin Coleman Jr., he hauled in 10 catches for 126 yards and a touchdown, giving Mizzou the balanced attack they needed to pull off the comeback.
That was huge. It looked like Missouri was out, but they kept chipping away and they exploded in the second half. I'm glad to see that this classic rivalry could be on its way back up again.
Meanwhile, Vanderbilt, they pulled off a huge road win at Virginia Tech, 44-20, scoring 34 unanswered points after trailing 20-10 coming into the second half. Quarterback Diego Pavia, he threw for 193 yards and two touchdowns, while running back Mikaylen Young added one rushing score. That kind of turnaround on the road is impressive, and it really shows the Commodores can score in bunches.
You just can't underestimate Vandy this year. Once they got the momentum, they were ready to go.
Oregon was on a different level, dominating Oklahoma State 69-3. They racked up 658 total yards. It was a complete performance. Offense, defense, and special teams, it was all clicking.
Yeah, that was just brutal for Oklahoma State. Like, that's a game where just nothing went right for them. I just don't even know what to say.
I don't either, especially because just two seasons ago, you know, they had Ollie Gordon, and it looked like they were going to go on a really good run with him. And then last year, he was so hyped up and didn't do anything. Illinois, they also made a statement, manhandling Duke 45-19 with 275 rushing yards and four total touchdowns. Mississippi State, they pulled off a big upset of their own, knocking off number 12 Arizona State 24-20, thanks to a defense that forced a fourth quarter interception and a big last minute 77-yard touchdown by Brennan Thompson.
Both these games are starting to show the depth we're seeing this season.
Oklahoma handled Michigan 24-13 with John Mateer rushing for 74 yards, passing for 270 with three touchdowns, showing why the Sooners are a serious SEC contender. Iowa State, they also had a historic win, beating Iowa for the first time at home since 2011, 16-13 in a tight defensive battle.
Finally, Iowa State breaks the freaking streak Like, that's a huge deal. Rivalry wins like that energize the whole program. This could be a great year for Iowa State.
We move into Texas. Baylor, they needed two overtimes to edge SMU 48-45 in a back-and-forth thriller. Ole Miss, they nipped Kentucky 30-23. It was actually pretty close. They looked good. Zach Calzada surprisingly looked pretty good. And Alabama, they bounced back with authority, scoring 73 points on UL Monroe after last week's double-digit loss to Florida State, led by Ty Simpson's Alabama school record, 17 straight completions, 226 yards, and 3 touchdowns.
Alabama looking great, but it is UL Monroe. Baylor, you know, awesome comeback. Did not see that one coming. Might have fallen asleep halfway through the game just to wake up and see the comeback. It was cool. Ole Miss, I mean, that was just rough to watch for a while. But, I mean, they got away with the win.
Yeah, definitely all three of those teams, interesting storylines for this season to come. On the weather front, Georgia, Clemson, and South Carolina, they all struggled early due to rain delays and heavy winds, which disrupted rhythm and created scoring inconsistencies. Even top programs, we all had to adjust on the fly, resulting in closer than expected games. And of course, we're talking about Georgia struggling against Austin Peay, Clemson struggling early against Troy, getting down 16-0, coming all the way back and delivering a second half shutout. And even South Carolina getting down to South Carolina State early 3-0. Obviously, they come back to win 13-10. But the weather, it brought something. There was something in the air that just screwed with everyone's game plan.
That was definitely a factor for sure. You definitely could see it. I mean, missed throws, you know, slipping on the turf, definitely played into the results.
So in summary, big upsets, historic wins, comebacks, and blowouts. Week 2 delivered everything that we love about college football, and with this kind of action early in the season, the rest of the year is going to be even more exciting.
Absolutely, and you never know what's coming next, and that's why we watch. Now it's time for our favorite segment, the TBD Game of the Week. Our Game of the Week is going to be number 6 ranked Georgia heading into Knoxville to take on number 15 ranked Tennessee at 3:30 p.m. on ABC.
So the spread for this game right now is set at UGA by 3.5. After our offensive showing this past week, I honestly don't even know how we are favored in this game. Tennessee, they're coming off two impressive wins, 45-26 against Syracuse, a whopping 72-17 against East Tennessee State University. Georgia, not really having been tested yet, coming off wins against Marshall, 45-7, and Austin Peay by only 28-6. They went into the half only up 14-3 and were on the half yard line and could not punch it in. Went all the way to fourth and goal, mismanaged the clock terribly, and could not punch it in against Austin Peay. I do want to do a quick quarterback comparison because I feel like in this game, the quarterbacks are important. You've got Joey Aguilar, transfer from UCLA, who transferred from App State. This season so far, he's 535 yards, 5 touchdowns, quarterback rating of 68.7. Gunnar Stockton, 417 yards, 2 touchdowns, QBR of 82.1. I think even with the stat line right now and the teams they played, it's still too early to tell who the better quarterback is. Joey Aguilar, he obviously has the starting experience after starting at App State for a few years, and he's got the arm talent, but Gunnar, he has wheels, man, and he's not afraid to use them. Some might say that he might like to use his wheels more than he likes to throw. But key factors nonetheless, Tennessee, they've got a veteran defense. They already have 8 sacks on the year, given that was against an FCS opponent. But they're missing their starting 2 cornerbacks. They will be out. So that's a big blow to their secondary. We haven't seen them against a mobile quarterback yet like Gunnar Stockton. So quarterback contain is going to be very important for them, making sure that they will block, especially, like I said, against a quarterback who likes to run more than he likes to pass. The offense, they're going to need to attack Georgia's secondary, which has lacked the past couple of years. If you throw it deep, more than likely, your receiver is going to come down with the ball and playing us. Explosive pass plays early will help Tennessee get in rhythm, but I also would say maybe allowing Joey Aguilar to use his legs and escape the pocket to get downfield more may be good for Tennessee because Georgia has also not been good at stopping the quarterback run, i.e. Jalen Milroe. Just take a look. Georgia, on the other hand, use Gunnar Stockton's legs to your advantage, but have Stockton also work on the pass better. Make sure he's able to see downfield. Tell him, hey, when the seam opens up, take it. Take the open receiver instead of just trying to go to your legs first thing. He's got to be able to pass, and he's got to be able to move the ball downfield through the air. Run the ball. It's been a focus for Georgia this entire offseason because they were so bad at it last year. But if they run the ball successfully, it's going to open up the pass and the option. Speaking of the option, Mike Bobo has got to play call better. I cannot, oh my gosh, as a Georgia fan, I cannot even begin to explain how bad Mike Bobo's play calling is. Dude likes to call screens. It was like against Marshall, we saw, hey, he's opening up the option. We're throwing the ball downfield. There was a screen here and there. And then against Austin Peay, it was like, screen, bro. Every play. We've got to open up the play calling a little bit more. Mike Bobo has got to make sure that he's calling good plays downfield, exposing the Tennessee defense. That's going to be very important in this game. Defensively, win at the line of scrimmage. Our line of scrimmage play defensively has been great. Offensive line play in the last couple of games is not. Offensive line got to step it up. Defensive line got to win at the line of scrimmage. Tennessee, they like to use the hurry up and go quick tempo. We got to use that to their advantage to create pressure in the pocket when Aguilar sets up to throw. And finally, our secondary, I mentioned it earlier, they've got to cover. They've got to play well. They've got to put guys in man and double coverage, especially on their fast wide receivers. And so they've got to just make those adjustments. And those are the things that both teams need to do in order to win this game. I don't know how it's going to turn out, and I'm going to let Joey, you pick first.
You know, this is a tough one. Joey Aguilar is showing that with, you know, a good program, the interceptions can kind of come down. Meanwhile, his arm talent is still there. Tennessee offense hasn't changed at all, it doesn't look like. But as we've said, not really the most tough teams. I mean, Syracuse, that game was a close game for a little while. And then Tennessee started pulling away. Georgia, I feel like every year we kind of talk about how they're struggling against a smaller team, the smaller teams at the beginning of the season. And then they end up, you know, having those big game wins. It's really hard to pick against Georgia, mainly because it's just Georgia. Based off of seasons past, it's very similar to how past seasons have gone for them. It's at Knoxville. Two DBs down. I'm going to go ahead and take Rocky Top, only because of the offensive firepower and lack thereof. For Georgia, I think the defensive line for Tennessee can kind of cause some issues for Gunnar Stockton. We saw him struggle a little bit at the end of last year when he's under pressure against Notre Dame and Texas. He prevailed against Texas, of course, but Notre Dame, he couldn't. I'm interested to see if he's developed at all in this game.
So, of course, part of me as a Georgia fan wants to think, you know, Austin Peay, the rain delay, it's a fluke, but I just can't. Tennessee looks really good right now. I'm going to take Tennessee in this one as well, which is really hard for me, but of course I trust Kirby Smart, but at some point, you know, you watch the film, you watch the teams, and it's just like, you know, coaching can only take you so far. Right now, I just don't think we have the offensive line talent. And I've had a lot of my friends say that they think that, you know, Georgia's going to win by like double digits, and they're not Georgia fans. They're Oklahoma fans, Bama fans even. Saying, no, Georgia's got this, Tennessee. I just don't see that right now. From what I've seen right now from Georgia, and I am a Georgia fan. I'm sitting here in my Brock Bowers jersey. But I just can't do it right now based on what I've seen. I've got to go with my gut here, and I've got to go with what I've seen. I'm going to take Tennessee here. It breaks my heart, but I think that Josh Heupel gets his first win over the Dogs and Tennessee's first win over the Dogs since 2016. And Isaac is picking Georgia.
Next game. Not one that I'm particularly excited for, but it is my team nonetheless. It's number 12 Clemson taking on Georgia Tech in Atlanta at 12 p.m. on ESPN. Now, the spread does have Clemson by 9.5 points. Look, typically you hear Isaac and or Mason give you a few facts about each team right here. Well, I'm about to give you the facts. Clemson is in some deep trouble. The offensive play calling might actually be worse than last year. I mean, we are talking about a team that everyone, especially Clemson fans, were excited to see come back. A defense that coming into the season looked like probably every quarterback was going to fear. I mean, an offense that would be lights out based on how they ended last season. Based on the numbers of players coming back as well. I mean, one of the highest return rate going into this season. That's awesome. Well, let me tell you something. Clemson in two games, mind you. LSU, okay. And then Troy. I'm going to hold on that. Troy has only 5 sacks with the defensive line that everybody's been super excited to see. TJ Parker, Peter Woods, Will Help, 5 sacks. One of those sacks being from Terrell, who is a defensive back. Their offense averages 213 passing yards per game. But it gets better, though. They average 75.5 yards per game rushing. They haven't even gotten to 100 yards. Actually, they did against Troy in the second half. They didn't look like they were getting there in the first half. Back to the defense, though. They've given up, on average, 328.5 total yards per game. An average of 235.5 yards per game in the air. Now, does that sound like the team that started the season with a Heisman contender? A national title contender? I mean, last year, Dabo said he was going to step back and take his hand out of play calling. And we saw much more improvement on the offense. So the question that I know many Clemson fans are asking is, why are we seeing those same play calls reoccurring this year? I mean, screen after screen after screen, run up the gut, run up the gut, run up the gut. Hey, why don't we throw a slant 3 times in a row after it hasn't worked 3 times in a row? If Garrett Riley is not cut out for the job, he should not have been hired in the first place. But I still have like this inkling of faith based off the end of last year. But let me tell you something. A Clemson team that looked as flat-footed as they did against Troy will not be able to hold up against this a diverse team as Georgia Tech's offense. At Georgia Tech. I mean, there are so many other games to worry about down the road. I mean, Florida State, for example, South Carolina, SMU. I could even see a loss against Syracuse at home. Just to name a few games, Clemson has to go in this game with major changes, nearly to the point where they are a whole different team. I mean, if they can't do that, it's going to be a long season for the Tigers and possibly the end of Dabo Swinney era.
Wow, so you truly believe that, you know, if Clemson loses 3 or 4 games this year, they could let Dabo go?
I mean, it could possibly be another FSU season from last season. I mean, I can see a possibility of Clemson maybe getting 1 or 2 more wins this season if they come out like they did against Troy.
So when it comes to this game, I'm going to give some edges. I give the offensive edge actually to Georgia Tech. Haynes King is very good at throwing the ball. Their offensive line is really good. They have Jamal Haynes at running back. He can get up and down on you so fast. And also Haynes King, he can just use his legs. I've mentioned this. I've talked about how well he's able to use his legs against teams. And they just don't, I haven't really seen a team have an answer for it. You talk about Georgia, you talk about Colorado, Miami last year. Nobody has an answer for Haynes King and his legs because they just run their option so well. Defensively, I'm going to give the edge to Clemson because they have so many returning starters, but they've got to do better like Joey's been talking about. And finally, special teams, I'm going to have to give the edge there to Georgia Tech. Against Colorado, they even blocked an extra point. We don't see a lot of guys get around to block an extra point. And Colorado's special teams unit in the past couple of years, they haven't been great, but you know, been good enough to make a lot of the extra points. I'm going to go with Georgia Tech here because it's in Atlanta and because I really trust Haynes King and his legs. I know that Brent Key is looking for a big win here. So give me Georgia Tech and the Yellow Jackets to win on Saturday.
If Clemson were to go in playing how they should be playing in the first place, I feel like this would not necessarily be a cakewalk, but a no-brainer that Clemson would win this game. It's just a matter of, are they going to do that? What does the locker room look like after that game against Troy? What does practices look like after that game against Troy, especially that freaking first half? What is offensive play calling going to look like? I think defense, I'm not worried all that much against Georgia Tech. It is the offense. I'm going to go ahead and pick my Tigers because I can never go against the Tigers. But I will say, if Clemson loses this game, I will reiterate, if Clemson loses this game, it is going to be a very long season for the Clemson Tigers.
And Isaac is also picking Georgia Tech with me. And I just wanted to say, how much do you want to bet, though, that the teams that we saw struggle because of the rain, South Carolina, Georgia, Clemson, just turn around and get absolute banger wins. I mean, we'll see. I'm not calling. I mean, I've already made my picks for these two games, but, you know, we'll see. Just like last week, it's time to head to Florida again, except this time it's South Florida versus number 5 Miami. Sorry, excuse me, number 18th ranked South Florida versus number 5 Miami at 4:30 p.m. on the CW. Not going to lie, the CW has definitely stepped up its game from last year's broadcast game, you know, but it's still a D tier. They've got a long way to go. And I'm kind of surprised, I guess this is just because they didn't think the USF was going to be that great of a team, but this is a top 25 matchup on the CW. There's something I never thought I'd say. Anyway, South Florida, they're off to a really hot start. The hottest start in program history, starting their season off winning 2 straight against top 25 opponents. This feat has not been done since 1936. They now head to Miami to take on the Hurricanes, and they are definitely looking to repeat history. If USF wins this, that would be 3 in a row, which I don't know if that's ever been done before, but if it has, it's definitely been a long time. Miami, on the other hand, started the season off strong and with a close win against Notre Dame. Transfer quarterback Carson Beck shined against the Irish with a strong outing, including 205 yards and 2 touchdowns. Their defense also looked pretty good, forcing 2 turnovers, 1 fumble, and 1 interception, which definitely cost Notre Dame the game. South Florida against Florida, though, quarterback Byron Brown, this guy's the real deal, man. I tell you what, if you watch this guy, you know he can use his legs and escape the pocket. Last week, we compared him to DJ Lagway because he can escape the pocket and use his legs, and he's got an arm, and he showcased them both. And I would even say that last week, I think he played better than Lagway. Anyway, he impressed against, obviously, our SEC counterpart, Florida, on the road in the swamp. He passed for 263 yards and a touchdown and adding on 66 rushing yards to set them up for a game-winning field goal. Last week, we said it wasn't likely, but anything can happen. And, well, it happened. Does Lightning strike twice this week, or is this USF team the real deal? Miami is still favored by 17.5. That's only 1 point under what Florida was favored against them last week. So, Isaac is picking USF in a close one. Now, I've got one. This is actually really difficult because this is the program-defining win for the season. Is USF actually this good team, or did they just have a really hot start and catch Florida off guard? Because Miami's good. Miami's offense looked really good against Notre Dame, and so did their defense. And for that reason, I'm going to take Miami again, only because I trust Miami as a Power Four school, and it's at Hard Rock. That place can be crazy. Ian Book said it was the toughest place he'd played, even harder than Georgia or Alabama. I don't even know what that guy's talking about. But still, it's still a tough place to play nonetheless. Give me the Hurricanes, and I think a close one. I think South Florida covers for sure, but give me the Hurricanes to take this one.
So a good buddy of mine, actually before the season started, predicted USF to more than likely be the Group of 5 playoff contender this year, which as of right now looks like a great pick. But 2 games in a row is awesome. Don't get me wrong. I mean, but you really got to look at it. Boise State without an Ashton Gentry. I mean, you really look at that Boise State team and it just was not good. Nothing taken away from USF. I just don't think that Boise State team is anything near what they were last year. And then Florida, who, you know, they're a good team, but we all know that that Florida team also has flaws year in and year out. That was probably one of their flaws. I don't see Miami making the same mistake as Boise State in Florida. I think Miami wins this game. Covering the spread is a little tough. 17.5 points is a good bit, but I'd say it's probably going to be pretty close to it. But yeah, I got Miami.
Save your job game coming right up. It's Sunbelt Billy and the Florida Gators, who are now unranked. They dropped right from 13 out, playing in the newly established real Death Valley against the number 3 LSU Tigers at 7:30 p.m. on ABC, where the Tigers are actually favored by 9.5. This is the third time we've talked about it today, but yes, everyone knows the current state of the Florida Gators is abysmal after losing to USF at home. All that talent and nothing to show for it. You know, I clowned Mizzou fans last week for crowning themselves like a playoff contender after beating Central Arkansas like 66-3 or whatever. I probably should have done that to Florida because they were doing the same thing after beating Long Island University 55-0. So again, Mizzou fans, I apologize. LSU, they're still riding high on that big win in week 1 against Clemson. Haven't won a season opener since 2019. They finally get it done. Obviously, They feel good, except they had a tough start against Louisiana Tech, but eventually got it together and ended up winning 23-7. Truly, I think I mentioned it, but a lot of these Power 4 teams struggled against not-so-great teams last Saturday. This matchup, DJ Lagway versus Garrett Nussmeier. Lagway already has a win against LSU in his career. They won last year in the Swamp, but now they got to travel to the real Death Valley and play against a really good, energized LSU team with a way better defense than they had last year. DJ Lagway, less than par showing against USF, 222 passing yards for one touchdown and an interception. Garrett Nussmeier, sort of the same against Louisiana Tech, 237 yards for a touchdown. I told Isaac that they really need to be careful here because this is a save-your-job game for Billy Napier. This is one where you go on the road, you need a big win after taking a huge L like that. We saw what Alabama did after getting clowned for a week. Florida, they're going to be re-energized. They're feeling extremely disrespected. They know they have a good team, and they're going to want to go to Death Valley and get a win. They're going to want to win this game twice in a row, and they're going to want to do it on the road this time. So Ryan Kelly's going to need to have his guys ready to play this week. He's got to have them understand that Florida wants revenge, that they want to bounce back on a huge win on the road, and they're going to have to be ready for that. Be ready for the moment.
And since Isaac couldn't be here to talk about this game, here's a video he sent making his official pick.
What's up, guys? It's Isaac Williams here with TBD, CFB, and it's a couple things I wanted to add about the LSU-Florida game this week. I am currently recording from the beautiful state of Hawaii, so aloha and mahalo for listening. But we're really excited. You know, LSU, it's a big game. The Florida game is always huge. We are 7-3 against Florida in the past 10 years, 4-1 in the past five. 5 years ago, of course, being the Marco Wilson shoe incident where we had a massive field goal in the fog at the Swamp by Cade York to win the game by a field goal in 2020, you know, during COVID. That was a crazy season. So we're really excited about this game. You know, last season we're coming off a bad taste in Gainesville where we lost 27-16. And even though we had more time possession, more first downs, and more yards than Florida, we could not get it done. And so hopefully that doesn't translate to this season. Florida's coming off a really, really tough loss against USF at home. A huge upset, a lot of uncertainty in Gainesville. This one's in Baton Rouge on Saturday night. I've got the Tigers. I think it'll be a good one. And go Tigers. Thanks so much, guys.
Yep. Saw that coming. LSU picked by the LSU fan. Anyway, Joey, who do you have in this matchup?
I mean, this one's pretty tough. I definitely agree that Florida's going into this game with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. From the sounds of it, the players really like Napier, but, you know, it's really tough because LSU's defense looked really good against Clemson. Granted, Clemson's offense looks not so great right now, but also their offense kind of looked a little meh, both against Clemson and Louisiana Tech. But I still got to go with LSU just with the atmosphere. I think they have the atmosphere on their side. I think that it could be an offensive shootout or, you know, however long DJ Lagway can last.
Man, I think this is tough. When you have a save your job game, your back is against the wall, you have to win this game. This is a big one that they need. Their schedule does not get any easier. This is one of the toughest road games they play all season. We've seen Brian Kelly not have his team ready before in the past. They were ready in week one against Clemson. They look good. Look good defensively. Offensively, subpar. But they still got Garrett Nussmeier. And I think, to me, this one's going to come down to who do you trust more? Do you trust Garrett Nussmeier more? Or do you trust DJ Lagway more? Give me Florida. Give me Florida to win this game. I think that they're going to be re-energized. They're going to bounce back. They're going to catch LSU off guard. It's going to be close, like by a field goal. But I think that Florida is going to go on the road and get this win. I don't know. It's a gut pick. Just give me something. And maybe I don't trust DJ Lagway more than Garrett Nussmeier, but I know that that game was rough for them against South Florida. I know they're going to want to bounce back, and it would not surprise me if they turned around right quick and came out here and got a win against LSU. Now, we've got a heavyweight clash in South Bend as the number 8 Notre Dame Fighting Irish host the number 16 Texas A&M Aggies. Both teams coming into this game with something to prove. Notre Dame coming off a narrow 27-24 loss to Miami. They're looking to bounce back and avoid an 0-2 start because they're coming off the bye week. The only game they've played is the Miami game. Meanwhile, Texas A&M enters undefeated at 2-0, but they'll be facing their toughest test yet.
Absolutely, Mason. The Aggies have been impressive, averaging over 40 points per game. I mean, quarterback Marcel Reed has been efficient, throwing for 289 yards and 4 touchdowns in their last game against Utah State. But this Notre Dame defense is a different beast.
Right you are, Joey. Notre Dame's defense, led by coordinator Chris Ash, has shown resilience. Despite the loss to Miami, they held the Hurricanes to just 314 total yards. They'll need to step up even more against the high-powered Aggies offense.
Now, on the flip side, Notre Dame's offense has some questions to answer. I mean, freshman quarterback CJ Carr showed flashes in the Miami game, but also had some rookie moments. He'll need to be more consistent, especially with the Aggies defense aiming to exploit any mistakes.
And Joey, we absolutely cannot forget about standout running back Jeremiah Love. He rushed for 91 yards and a touchdown against Miami and will be crucial in establishing the ground game to take pressure off Carr and open up the pass.
Looking at the betting lines, Notre Dame is favored by 6.5 points with an over-under set at 50.5. That suggests a close, high-scoring affair.
Given the stakes, both teams ranked and a potential playoff berth on the line, this game feels like a playoff atmosphere. Notre Dame's experience and home field advantage might give them the edge.
But don't count out the Aggies. They've been rolling, and if their offense clicks, they could very well pull off the upset.
So, here come the predictions. Isaac is picking Notre Dame in this game. This is another tough one because Notre Dame, they had a tough outing and they've lost a game, but Texas A&M hasn't really played anybody. And yes, they have Marcel Reed and they have Le'Veon Moss back, who's an extremely good running back. Notre Dame went on the road and got the upset last year. I'm going to pick the opposite this year. Give me Texas A&M to go on the road and upset the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. I do think this one will be close. Obviously, we've got our spread at 6.5. I think it'll be even closer than that. I'm thinking somewhere between 1 to 3 points, field goal, or by a point. I think Texas A&M, they've had a couple rough outing or like a rough start to a couple of these games and ended up finishing strong. Maybe the same thing here, but I think the Aggies pull off the upset here.
I really like that you mentioned the Aggies haven't a slow start their past couple games, because that's actually what worries me about this team. And what worries me with Notre Dame is Notre Dame can take advantage of that on the defensive side. They can slow you down. They can at least give their offense the opportunity to get ahead early. And then at that point, confidence and momentum is out of the question. This is a tough one. It's in South Bend. Both teams honestly have potential, but I think I'm going to go with Notre Dame. I think I just like the coaching staff more. I like the defense. It's really tough. I really want to pick A&M based off of the experience on the offense, but I think I'm going to go Notre Dame here.
All right, let's finish out this week with some SEC action. Vanderbilt, they're heading to Columbia to try and knock off the number 11 South Carolina Gamecocks in Columbia at 7:45 on SEC Network. It's funny, but both teams are literally coming off a manhandling of the same team, Virginia Tech. Only difference? Vanderbilt managed to do it on the road. They come off that win 44-20. Like we said, they had 34 unanswered points after being down 10-20, had a shutout in the second half, was not looking good. South Carolina, they got it done in a neutral site in Atlanta, but they still looked sluggish in the first half. You know, didn't it was like 10-8 until they got an 80-yard punt return touchdown, and it was GG's from there. South Carolina, they're favored in this one by 5.5. Every team not named Clemson, though, they know you can't underestimate the home atmosphere of Willie B. What I mean by that is Clemson has a pretty good record in Willie B, so they're not really worried about it. But a lot of SEC teams, Texas A&M, old school Alabama, and Missouri, they know. Anyway, a lot of SEC teams, they, like I just said, they have found out the hard way, and it's also a night game, which makes it even worse for Vandy. This game, though, it features two very fun and very mobile quarterbacks, Vandy's Diego Pavia and South Carolina's Lenora Sellers. Vanderbilt has been impressive under head coach Clark Lee. He's absolutely revamped the program, took it from nothing, just done something that a lot of coaches that were there haven't been able to do. Derek Mason, he tried to do it and couldn't, but Clark Lee, he has come back in and really risen this program on the back of Diego Pavia, really. He's the one who's helped do this. If you've seen Any Given Saturday, you know he kind of called his shot. He told Clark Lee, if you want to win, you'll get me to come there. And they did. And now they're playing at an even higher level, maybe even higher of a level than last season. I mean, starting out on a big road win. Commodores offense, they've been clicking, and their defense has shown improvement from last year. On the flip side, South Carolina's offensive line has been solid, but they'll be tested by Vanderbilt's defensive front. That's actually probably one of my biggest worries about South Carolina is their offensive line. They didn't look very good against Virginia Tech. If the Commodores can disrupt the pocket and contain Sellers, they definitely have a shot in this one. Looking at the history, South Carolina has dominated this matchup, winning 16 straight games. However, the Commodores, they're obviously a much improved team this year, and they'll be looking to break that streak. So, Joey, to pick first on the final game, who you got?
I mean, this is a really tough one. South Carolina's first two games, it took a special teams return to ignite momentum and energy in the team in order to score. South Carolina's defense looks good. Offense, you know, not what I anticipated it to look like. Looks like they wait for somebody to do something and then they go. Meanwhile, Vanderbilt, I still don't have confidence. So I feel like I'm forced to have to say this, but I'm going to pick South Carolina. South Carolina.
Good Lord, spit it out, dude. I know, though. I'm proud of you. This is like 3 weeks in a row that he's picked South Carolina. For me, I'm also right there. I'm going to pick the Gamecocks to win this game. I will not be one to underestimate the home atmosphere and advantage of Willie Bryce Stadium. It's packed. It's loud. They do the rally towel. They do the sandstorm. They play that freaking dumb chicken rooster noise on third down. It'll break your eardrums when you hear it, especially when you're sitting right under the speakers. But yes, nonetheless, South Carolina will win this game. And if Vandy comes in there and wins, tip your hat. They're a good team, and I'll give credit where credit's due. But as of right now, I have South Carolina winning this game, and Isaac does as well. That's a wrap on today's episode. Week 3 is stacked, from high-stakes SEC clashes to ranked matchups across the country.
Yeah, Mason, we've made our picks, but you know, anything can happen. Upsets are coming.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Catch all the games this weekend and join us next week for more previews, reactions, and hot takes.
And always remember,
no matter what team you pull for, if you're on God's side, you're always on the winning team. Just know that there's a Father in heaven who loves you, who created you, who wants to have a relationship with you. In order to do that, you have to know that Jesus came to die for your sins. You are not perfect. I'm not perfect. Nobody's perfect. And he came and died. The Bible says in order to be saved, all you have to do is believe in your heart and confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and that he was raised from the dead on the third day. If you have any questions about that, you can always reach out to us. We're praying for our listeners. We love you guys. We just thank you so much for listening. Go ahead. If you like the video, subscribe to us and leave a comment on the video letting us know who you think is going to win these games, or if you think we're crazy, or if we suck. We want to hear. Let us know. Be honest. Be truthful. Let us know what we're missing, because we need to know too. Anyway, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Later.